You're listening to 209 Radio, and this is So Far and Yet So Near. And a very warm welcome to you. I am Derek Thorne.
And I am Hannah Higginson. And this is a new show to 209 Radio, in which we will be showing you that the world really is on your doorstep here in Cambridge.
Our aim will be to bring you the diversity of Cambridge in a half-hour programme every fortnight. We'll be speaking to Cambridge people who are originally from different parts of the world, and also covering news stories that link you to the whole globe.
And coming up this week, a report on a film about gypsy travellers shown recently here in Cambridge.
How nuns eating rice are helping us to find new ways of reducing global hunger.
And I will be finding out just how big my carbon footprint really is for some Cambridge-based environmental experts.
Firstly though, World AIDS Day, which happened on the 1st of December. Now, this is the day when people from all countries are encouraged to remember those lost to the disease, also to increase their efforts at preventing and treating HIV/AIDS, and of course to campaign for change. In Cambridgeshire, one of the largest campaigns was run by the charity Diverse, and that's spelt D-H-I-V-E-R-S-E, see what they did there? And earlier in the week, I went to speak to Anne Strether, their Assistant General Manager, to find out exactly what's been happening in this area.
We decided that leading up to World AIDS Day, we would launch a special World AIDS Day campaign, which we called the Red and Alive campaign, to try to build the real sort of solid base of awareness of the seriousness of these issues around HIV and of sexual health in general. And part of that, we felt, was to involve as many people as we possibly could in schools and venues, restaurants, businesses, right across the county, so that we could really raise the profile of these issues and how important they are and get the information across to people who need it.
Can you give me a few examples, perhaps, of what kind of events have been happening?
Well, there have been a whole range of street collections with information right across the county, because we have tried very hard to reach all parts of Cambridgeshire in which we work, so people across the county can get the information they need. There have been businesses who supported us, particularly restaurants who've had red wine tasting. We've had a publicity company who've donated part of their revenue on World AIDS Day to ourselves. Differently, we had a memorial for remembrance and celebration to think of people who are living with HIV, who may have lost to HIV. Schools have taken part right across the county in assemblies, wearing red ribbons, and we've had Wear Red to Work days. So really quite a range of things have been happening.
So how big then is the issue here, and how much is Cambridgeshire affected by HIV and AIDS?
Well, there is no part really of the country, or indeed the world now, that's unaffected by HIV, but certainly within Cambridgeshire, we're seeing a particular situation here of the eastern region is actually one of the worst affected by rising HIV rates in the UK outside of London and the South East. We had, there were fewer than 100 people in the 90s, but now that's risen to over 560 new cases just over the last year. So it really is quite worrying. And rates of other infections as well are rising too.
And what do you actually feel is the attitude in Cambridgeshire? I mean, do you think this is actually ignored? Do you think people perhaps don't realise it's as big an issue as it is?
I think there are many, many people who really don't realise just how serious it is and how essentially unprotected sex can lead to the risk of very serious illnesses. People don't seem to have the information that they need to keep themselves safe, so that's what we're trying to make better.
Let's also turn to the global issue of HIV/AIDS, because, of course, there is a link, isn't there, between what goes on very locally in different parts of the world and what's actually happening globally. I mean, can you firstly tell me what the global situation is looking like and how we are linked to it as well?
Certainly. I mean, there are now over 40 million people around the world who are living with HIV. It is becoming increasingly serious, and I think this is felt in various parts of the world where the percentage of people within that country who are living with HIV is so severe. But we are very much part of a worldwide picture. No country or part of the world is untouched by HIV now, and it's just that in some parts of the world it's becoming, you know, more serious than others. So we feel very responsible, very much part of that global picture, and the links that we have with organisations, HIV organisations around the world, are very strong and very precious to us.
So finally then, how can people in Cambridgeshire get involved with this issue?
First of all, I think it's really important that if people have concerns that they know where to go and to where to give advice to people. They can always come to Diverse. We're always delighted to talk in confidence to anyone. Certainly, if there are events going on, not just around World AIDS Day, but through the year in raising awareness, providing information of these issues, then it will take everybody a concerted effort to get the information out so that young people in particular can keep themselves safe.
Anne Strether from Diver speaking there.
And Anne also asked us to mention that they have a drop-in session at their office at the Mill Road end of Gwydir Street on Thursdays from 3 till 5. If you wish to find out more or donate or maybe fancy volunteering with the organisation, help which they're always glad to receive, just take a look at their website, which is www.diverse.org.uk.
And that's Diverse, spelled D-H-I-V, in case you forgot. Now, let's remain with HIV/AIDS for a moment, but hear about a story from much further away. Now, in the last few months, I went to Tanzania in East Africa, partly as a journalist, and one of the things I was really trying to find out more about was how music is becoming a really important medium in East Africa to talk about HIV/AIDS, which is normally a big taboo subject. Nowadays, the biggest music scene in Tanzania is something called bongo flavour, which features a lot of rapping as well as singing. And believe me, this stuff is all over the place. You can listen to the radio or just go on buses anywhere in the country and you'll be sure to hear it. So anyway, let's listen to my report, which began at a rapping competition in a small town in the southern highlands of Tanzania. Welcome to Makambako, which is a town on the main road in the Iringa region of Tanzania. And allow me to set the scene. I'm stood at the back of a field in the slight shelter of what I think is a police station. And in front of me is a crowd of about 500 people, probably more. It is, in fact, a rapping competition being organised by an NGO that works in this area called SPW, or Students Partnership Worldwide Tanzania. And with me is their deputy director, Jimmy Innes. So, Jimmy, what's happening here?
Well, basically, this is a rap competition amongst some of the more prominent rappers here in the Iringa region. They're singing about social issues, especially AIDS. You'll probably hear the word ukimwi being mentioned, which means AIDS here in Swahili.
What kind of things are they saying about HIV/AIDS?
Well, the young people themselves, the rappers, they're talking about it from a youth perspective. They're talking about it from a real perspective, their lives on the streets in Iringa, in Tanzania, the pressures they face day to day, the risky situations they're in, the poverty which surrounds their lives. It's a social commentary on what it is to be young people today, and of course AIDS plays such a prominent part in a young person's life in Tanzania today.
So is rapping a really big scene in Tanzania at the moment?
For sure, it's a very big growing scene as well. It's a new movement of music in Tanzania which has been growing up over the last six or seven years really. Started off in its infancy and is now taking the nation over, basically, and all the young people in Tanzania today are fully into their rap, the Tanzanian rap. On the streets of Dar, everyone knows the words to the songs. They're writing their own poems down in their exercise books at school or just at home and on a bit of paper, and everyone wants to be the new rap star in Tanzania.
Well, I thought this was a fascinating statement by Jimmy, that all the young people in Tanzania are making up their own rap and hoping to be the next star. So I've decided I'd like to know whether it's true. And I've come here to the market, which is the main market in Iringa town, and one of the most colourful and bustling places in the whole region, see if I can meet anyone who's got any rap they'd like to do for me. I'm not sure if it'll work, but I shall try. After a few polite inquiries, I was pointed in the direction of a young pea seller, calling himself Clever Boy, not his real name, I presumed, and before I knew it, he was joined by another two people, and the rapping began. I recognised the lyrics immediately. Usione so is a slang term in Swahili, which means don't be shy, and it's emblazoned on billboards across the country as part of an HIV/AIDS campaign. The lyrics are encouraging people not to be shy about the different ways of preventing HIV/AIDS infection, that is, saying no to sex, being faithful to a single partner, or using a condom. The song goes on to speak about a number of different issues, how it's not cool to have many sexual partners, how people living with the virus can become stigmatised, and much more. After the rap, I asked Clever Boy, whose real name is Clever Mgulunde, to tell me why he started rapping.
I finished school in 1996, and I've been working here on Iringa Market for a few years. I started writing songs when I left school, and then I met my friends here on the market, and we started doing rapping together. I'm Clever Boy, and I rap with Simple J and Malaika Jury. Our songs are about important subjects, because these subjects affect everyone, This is the way we practice every morning and sometimes while we're at work.
But it's not only these young men from Iringa Market who are rapping about HIV/AIDS. In the last few months, a song by the bongo flavour artist Firoz, featuring Professor J, has taken Tanzania by storm. This song is called Sterehe, which means enjoyment, and in it, Firoz is telling a story from the point of view of a man who is in hospital and who thinks he has HIV. To find out more about the song, I spoke to Theresia Moyo, who, as well as studying sociology at the University of Dar es Salaam, is a part-time editor on a sexual health discussion website for young people in Tanzania. I began by asking her to tell me what Firoz is saying.
What he's actually explaining is how much he went outside with women, like slept around with a lot of women and without protection and even without caring about advices from his friends and other people around him.
And so then later in the song, another character makes an entrance, which is a doctor who is, as it were, rapped by Professor J. And so what's he saying to the main character?
Well, actually, the doctor was just trying to calm down the patient by telling him that he should not worry, because it doesn't mean that all the signs he has got means that he's got HIV/AIDS. He might have some other diseases with the same signs, but later on, the results are showing that he's HIV positive, and so he's trying to tell him that he should just eat well, exercise, so that he can live positively.
Usually, what are bongo flavor artists rapping about?
Well, they rap like about love, money, women, girls, going to clubs, partying, and all those sort of things, yeah.
You're a student in Dar es Salaam University, so do all of your friends and all of the students know this Sterehe song already?
Everybody knows about this song. It was very, very popular. It's kind of educative song, which is very rare to find in Tanzanian bongo flavor artists.
And do you know all the words?
Yeah.
Issues like HIV/AIDS used to be highly sensitive here in Tanzania, and to some degree they still are, but now it seems young people are willing to talk about them and even to get up on stage and rap about them. The mood of a nation is often reflected in its music, and the popularity of songs like this tells us that these issues are not quite the taboo that they once were.
So there it is, and the exciting thing from a local perspective is that I did actually bring back some recordings of the songs that Clever Boy and his friends on the market had made up, and their one about HIV/AIDS was not the only one. They've also got a really good song about respecting your elders, believe it or not. And I've actually given these songs to a couple of DJs who are local to Cambridge, and they're currently working on remixes. So when we have remixes, we will play them out on this show and hopefully speak to the guys who've done the remixes as well. Also, I can just say that if you do want to find out more about any of SPW's projects, they're the guys who are running the rapping competition in Tanzania, do go to their website. It is www.spw.org.uk. And so, Hannah, what is happening in the area?
Well, whether it's bongo flavour, blues or breakbeat that you're into, why not head down to DIY DJ at Soul Tree this and every Monday? Or maybe you fancy DJing yourself at the night. If this sounds like your bag, then you can give them a call on 01223 477 900. It's good to give them a call beforehand to avoid disappointment. Staying with Soul Tree for a moment, did you know that every Friday and Saturday from midday until 5, they have a massive retro clothing sale there? And if you've still got some Christmas shopping to do, then why not you get yourself down to Cambridge Farmers and Craft Market, held every Sunday in the market square. Get there early to buy your seasonal Christmas veggies or fair trade goodies. If you're on a bit of an ethical tip, then Cambridge Against the Arms Trade is holding a meeting on Monday the 19th at King's College from 7:30 until 9. That's just a sample of some of the stuff coming up in the next week. For more info, you can go to www.weareallneighbours.co.uk.
And if you want to get in touch with us at all, then please also do give us an email. The show email here is sofar, which is all one word, at 209radio.co.uk, and 209 are numbers. And if you've got any stories that you'd like to tell us, anything reflecting on the diversity of Cambridge, we'd be really, really keen to hear from you.
So, last week I was lazily leafing through the Sunday papers and I sniffed out a positive report on climate change, a rare event these days with increasing predictions of doom and gloom. At a climate summit in Montreal, what has been described as the biggest breakthrough in combating global warming took place when the global community stood up to Bush's government and forced them to formally commit to working out measures to tackle this massive issue. Andy Brown of Cambridge Carbon Footprint is a local man who knows a lot about this global issue. I chatted to him about what his organisation does and what action we as individuals can take on climate change.
Our main interest is trying to explain to people what parts of their life are actually causing the carbon dioxide emissions which are causing so much trouble to the global atmosphere. And we do that by analysing some lifestyle questions on our computer and then giving you a figure for your total carbon dioxide emissions every year. And you can compare that with the fact that the world can only cope with about a quarter of the emissions that the UK produces every year.
So luckily for us, we're actually sitting next to the computer. So what we're going to do now is go through the programme and I will find out what my carbon footprint is, which could be a bit daunting. So Andy, talk us through how this programme works.
So we start with the heating of your house. In order to find out how much heat it uses, we need to know how well it's insulated. And the easy way to answer that question is to ask how quickly it cools down when the heating is turned off.
Well, it's a bit of an old terraced house, so it stays warm for a little while, I think.
Right. The other issue about the heat you use is actually how warm you keep your house. And again, we can get to the bottom of this by asking whether you keep it not very hot and wear lots of clothes, or do you keep it pretty hot and wear summer clothes all year?
Well, I'd say that we probably keep it about comfortable.
Right. We then look at your water heating. And the two issues here are how many baths and showers do you take in a week? One or two, three or four, or most days?
I think it's probably most days.
Okay, that's fine. And do you bath or do you shower or do you share your bath with somebody else?
I usually shower. I'm not too keen on sharing my bath water, I'm afraid.
Okay. And what kind of light bulbs do you have? Do you have ordinary light bulbs or do you use energy-saving light bulbs?
Well, maybe this will save me from my carbon footprint. We do use energy-saving light bulbs.
That's very good. And do you buy your electricity from a green electric company?
No, we don't. And maybe this is something we could talk about. What do you mean by green electric?
About 5% of the electricity in this country is produced by renewable sources, which is a mixture of wind power, hydroelectricity, and in fact the gas that comes out of rubbish dumps. And you can choose to buy your electricity from a company like Ecotricity or Good Energy, and they will guarantee that most of the energy they provide you is coming from wind power stations or from biogas or from hydroelectricity. And so you know that however much electricity you use, there's very low emission cost to it. And it's very easy to change your electricity supplier. All these people have websites which will help you do it. And a click of a few buttons and you can buy your electricity from Ecotricity or whoever you wish.
Great.
There are then a couple of questions about the food that you eat. And there is a huge amount of energy and carbon emissions involved in the growing and the preparation and the moving around of food. The first question is, do you cook your own food or do you buy a lot of convenience food or is it a mixture of the two?
I do actually cook a lot of my own food.
And do you have a rough idea where your food comes from?
I'd definitely say a lot of it came from overseas, so it's probably about I'd say half and half.
About average, okay. And then the important questions, I think, that affect our carbon footprints are about how much we travel by air. Have you been to Europe this year?
I have been to Europe. That snowboarding trip, I think, is going to tip me over.
Have you been to America or India?
I have actually been to America this year.
So we can now actually look at the results. Overall, your footprint is about 7.1 tonnes a year, which compares with the UK average of 10 tonnes. So that's already better than the national average. Interestingly, but for your flight to America, your footprint would actually be substantially below the national average, because almost two-thirds of your carbon emissions this year have come from that one flight across the Atlantic. And I think this is actually a very difficult problem, because with jet fuel being untaxed and with the low-cost airlines working very hard to attract our custom, it is very tempting to fly far more than we really should. The rest of your footprint actually looks very good. Certainly, if you turned your thermostat down a little bit, you would save both money and carbon emissions. Again, because your food is mostly home-cooked, And although you've got a tiny bit for cooking, it's actually not enough to worry about. It is much more important to cook your own food than to worry about how it's cooked.
So if people want to find out what their carbon footprint is, how can they do that?
We try and turn out to festivals and fairs whenever we can. There are also a number of websites which will calculate your footprint for you. And you can search for those, or you can go to our site, which is www.cambridgecarbonfootprint.org.uk. And our site also has lots of useful bits of advice on what you could do to reduce your footprint and how you should be thinking about a gentle programme. It's obviously if you fly a lot and if you eat a lot and if you drive a lot, you're not going to cut it down by 50% tomorrow. But you should be thinking, like the government is thinking, of cutting down by, you know, 3 or 5% a year, and a slow programme so that in 10 or 15 years we are beginning to approach a lifestyle which would be sustainable.
That was Andy Brown from Cambridge Carbon Footprint. Now, the organisation also does some work with children, and I also spoke to Rosemary, someone that works for the organisation, about how she's trying to raise awareness amongst kids about this very important issue.
There are quizzes for three different age groups of children about climate change. A lot of children actually know quite a lot about climate change because it's being introduced into the curriculum at school. And so I've been very interested to find that some of the children know more than I expect. And so for the 5 to 7 year olds, for example, we've just asked them very, very simple questions about energy and whether they know good ways to save energy or what uses most energy. For example, whether it's drying their clothes in the tumble dryer or putting them on the washing line and things like that.
That's great that children, I guess, almost seem to know more than their parents.
Quite often I think the children do know more than their parents, but of course they don't have a lot of power to change things, and so a child may not have the option of whether they are driven to school or whether they walk. So it's also very important to talk to parents about it as well.
So their website address again, it's www.cambridgecarbonfootprint.org.uk.
And I actually did do my carbon footprint with Andy as well. And let's just say Hannah beat me, so I'm looking to catch up with her. You are listening to So Far and Yet So Near on 209 Radio. And please don't forget that you can also get this show through podcasting, i.e. it's a download and you can subscribe to it. So just go to www.209radio.co.uk to find out about that. And if the word podcasting does confuse you, as it does me, I must say, there is a frequently asked questions section there that you can also have a look at. So, a bit of news for you now. The number of hungry people in sub-Saharan Africa has increased by 20% since 1990, according to a new report. And indeed, Africa is failing to increase its food output, while China, Brazil and India all are. Now, this came out of the International Food Policy Research Institute, and a lot of big wheels in the field seem to think that the resources are there to deal with the problem, but political will isn't. That's both from rich countries and poor countries. Anyway, the upshot is that yet another of the Millennium Development Goals, these are the goals that the international community has set to try and make the world a much better place in this new century, yet another of these may not be met. This one was to halve hunger by 2015. But to possibly help with that, a new biological invention. Now, you've heard of cornflakes and so on being fortified with iron. Well, some scientists have now managed to come up with fortified rice, which is packed with extra iron. Now, interestingly, this is not genetically engineered, as you might expect. It's actually created just by conventional breeding techniques. So, over and over again, these scientists are just picking the most iron-rich rice varieties and breeding them on. And it seems to work. Researchers have done some tests on a group of nuns and found those eating it had more iron in their blood than those not. And so this could actually affect the nutrition of a large number of people in the world, we're talking billions here, and possibly preventing anemia, amongst other things.
Well, Derek, I've just got to ask, why nuns?
Nuns, yeah, very good question. I mean, I presume it's because nuns as a community are probably, they stay in the same place, i.e. the nunnery, quite consistently. So if you want to make sure they're eating the very same sort of rice every day and not kind of going off to a cafe and eating something else, then I guess that's it. So there you go. Trials of the future, use nunneries. Yes, and anyway, finally on this week's show, I went to see a film recently all about gypsy travellers at the Barat Bavan or Old Library on Mill Road. It was called Gaggio d'Ilo, and my quick synopsis is that it was all about a French gypsy who travelled to Romania to try and find a musician, which was very important to his late father. And basically, when he gets there, he actually meets a gypsy community, ends up staying with them, has a romance with one of the local gypsies, and so on. Very good film, I must say, and also really interesting story to how it was made, because the director, a guy called Tony Gatliff, actually went to the community, the very same community in Romania, and stayed with the gypsies. And so these gypsies actually were the actors in the film, and so only two professional actors, the main character and the woman he romances, were professional actors. Otherwise, everyone in the film was made up from this gypsy community, and it was a very kind of participatory way that they made the film. Anyway, after the show, there was a very open question and answer session with a group of local travellers. And after that, I spoke to Cliff Cadona, who was representing the National Travellers Action Group. And I firstly asked him about his thoughts on the film.
The film itself was showing of really the lifestyle that people are living in that country in this present times. But like I said, after I watched the film, a million miles away from how we're living here in the UK.
So what's the point you'd like to make there about diversity, for example? Is there much more diversity than a lot of people might think?
We are very diverse people, you know what I mean? We've lived here, like I say, an awful long time. We've lived in communities for a long time. And all of this talk about we don't get on with the settled community and we're outsiders and this is it's just rubbish, because, you know what I mean, we have to live with the settled community every day. We're as diverse as you could possibly imagine.
Now, the film did, as you say, represent kind of one particular community in one part of the world. And yet, do you think films like that are a good idea to increase understanding amongst people who really don't know much about gypsy communities?
I think films like that is very good understanding for people to watch, to understand the turmoil and the poverty that people are living in other countries, to do something about changing that. But I also do think that it blindfolds people to the truth of thinking that this is how Romani gypsy or Irish travel would be in this country, because, like I say, it is a million miles away from the truth.
Could you give me just a sense of exactly the kind of problems that you're undergoing in this region, that the different gypsy communities are undergoing in this region?
The main thing that's really happening in this region is scaremongering of minute individuals that just want to keep a hate campaign going against us, when reality of fact is we go out speaking to people every day. You know what I mean? If there's tensions, we try to do what we can do to try and bring people round to understand what our predicament is. We need somewhere to live. That is our main priority. If people could understand that if we can just get somewhere to live legal and proper, we can show these people that we want to contribute just as much to society as what anybody else does.
So what do you think is the way forward then? What should we be doing to try and increase understanding?
What you must do is speak to Romani gypsies and Irish travellers themselves. Don't take second-hand information from people that speaks for us. You come and speak to us, or we'll come and speak to you. And we will help to break your fears down against us and us against you.
Excellent. And someone listening to this might think, well, you know, I'd like to go and visit you. You know, would that be all right? Could someone just go and, you know, walk up onto one of the sites and say, hello, I'd like to find out more about you?
Well, as a man like Kilroy Silk come to live with me for a week, my door is open to anybody that wants to come and live with me.
And so if someone wanted to meet you and find out more, where could they go and how could they get hold of you?
Oh, well, it's quite easily to actually, if you want to check up on me at all and find out of what I've been actually doing myself, if you go on to Cliff Cadona at CODONA at the BBC, that will give you a pretty good link up to websites on much to do with the gypsies and travellers in this country.
So, you probably heard mention there of Robert Kilroy Silk. I did actually do some research into that afterwards and found out that, yes, indeed, for a Channel 4 programme, Robert Kilroy Silk did come and stay with Cliff Cadona, and the results were, well, not explosive exactly, but very interesting. So check that out if you want. It's all on the web. So anyway, yes, that was Cliff Cadona, who was representing the National Travellers Action Group.
So that's all from So Far and Yet So Near on 2NOM Radio for this week. We hope you've enjoyed our first show, and don't forget that we'll be back every 2 weeks
for a roundup of what's been happening on the global scene in Cambridge. My name's Hannah Higginson. Thanks for listening.
I'm Derek Thorne, and don't forget that we do have an email here. It is sofar@209radio.co.uk, and we will be back with you next time. Take care until then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.